Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. What happened to Carly Russell? The 25-year-old black woman returned to her Hoover, Alabama home last Saturday night, that's south of Birmingham, after a mysterious disappearance 2 days before. Since her return, police aren't saying much about the investigation. Neither are her parents, who spoke to NBC News yesterday.
And can you tell me what happened Saturday night? Did you just get a knock at the door?
Anything leading to the case itself, we can't discuss that. Carly has given detectives her statement so that they can continue to pursue her abductor.
Do you believe that there's an abductor still out there?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We do not know what happened to Carly Russell, but we are going to take a look tonight at what information we have, and we're going to explore some of the possibilities. My guests are Kathy Givens, co-founder of 1211 Partners, a nonprofit group fighting sex trafficking, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist with Roll Call. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Kathy, Mary, thank you both for joining the conversation.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Sure. Mary, let me start with you. Why do you think there's so much fascination about this particular case?
Well, I think to begin with, when we see this fascination about a missing woman, usually it is about a white woman. That's why they even have the name Missing White Woman Syndrome, because it seems like everybody is really fascinated by those cases, the Petitos, all of those cases. And so it was interesting, and this was a young, beautiful black woman who was missing, and people seemed to really focus on it. I think really it was TikTok and others that were focusing on it to start, to try to get media interest, because in general, black and indigenous women go missing, and you really don't see a lot about that. And then it was the circumstances. It really was set up like a mystery. This person called 911 about a child on the interstate and then disappeared, and they found her phone and her car and all of these things sitting there. So people are interested in something, you know, when it's a mystery, it's this young woman. And then I think people were generally caring about what happened. They wanted to know what happened. They, I think, were praying that it didn't end badly, but there was all kinds of speculation. Was this a lure, or is it kidnapping, or all of these things? And then when she shows back up a couple of days later, people want answers, because people, when they have a mystery, they don't want to leave it out there. They want to know just what happened in those days. So it was the perfect setup. And now, you know, they don't have answers because you don't know. Her parents are saying, yes, she was abducted, but she was not in a good state. You know, her boyfriend is saying she's back, but yes, she really fought hard. And so we just don't know. And, you know, the police are investigating, and these things take time. But we live in a time where if you don't have answers, people are going to supply their own theories. And you wonder about the woman at the center of it, really, and how is she? And is all this speculating, what effect is it having on her?
Mm-hmm. Kathy, did you see the interview on NBC yesterday?
I did not. I did not see the interview on NBC, but I have been following the story, and it just hits close to home, you know, just because of the population that I work with and the my own experiential knowledge. So it just hits close to home, and again, like Mary said, it's just the fascination of what do we do to help? I think that's what people want to know. What do we do to help, and what do we look out for?
You said it hits close to home. What do you mean?
It hits close to home because I, on a daily basis through our organization, I work with individuals who have experienced human trafficking. And I just want to make clear that abduction, we can't assume that this is a trafficking case, right? And abduction doesn't always mean human trafficking. However, working with these individuals on a daily basis, we hear all kinds of stories. We hear through the grooming process, or we hear, you know, that people were snatched. And so I think for me, it's just what are the resources that are needed now, you know? And so I think the answers will help us provide what resources can be extended to this young woman.
Mm-hmm. Can you break down the difference between a trafficking case and a kidnapping case? Because sometimes I think people confuse the two.
Absolutely. Trafficking has to involve force, fraud, and coercion, right? And of course, if we see force, if someone's taken off of the street, like some of these movies that we've seen in mainstream, if someone's taken, we automatically assume, okay, that is force, so that is trafficking. But there's also the component of fraud and coercion. So a lot of times, many of the individuals that I work with, and including my own personal experience, we weren't taken. Like that, a lot of the individuals were groomed. And so there's a process of psychological abuse. There's a process of trauma course detachment that takes place. And so it's a process, right? And it can take 3 days and it can take 3 years for a trafficker to really hone in. And I think the transaction of money, right? So if there's something being exchanged for food, or something, or a need that is being provided in exchange for a commercial sex act or labor, that's trafficking. Kidnapping, abduction, however, is just being taken for whatever the individual wants to do, whether that is abuse, assault, we don't know, right? But it doesn't involve being a commercial sex act or being sold into labor. So that's not trafficking. So that's the main difference.
We are taking a look at the Carly Russell case, the 25-year-old black woman who disappeared last Thursday and returned home on Saturday. Not a lot of information coming from the police. Her parents also not saying a whole lot about this case, but we're going to take a look at the facts and also talk about the case and the possibilities surrounding it. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pamela, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Pamela. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. How are you, Harold?
Fine, thank you. Let's go right ahead.
Yeah, well, my thoughts are, initially, I am glad that the young woman was, found, or, I think that's everyone's first and foremost concern. But, people are also concerned about, listen, is this story a made-up story? Or just what's going on, and then there, is some offense because people are getting mad at people who are saying, hey, this story can possibly sound like it's a hoax because there are too many parts that aren't connecting. And, first and foremost, I had already thought, I said, her parents are going to step in. They're going to have to shield her because what people don't understand, and I worked in law enforcement for over 25 years, is that these investigators already know. They already don't look at cameras. They're just trying to buy out time a little bit to be respectful. But what I heard, I saw the interview that you're talking about, Harold,
mm-hmm.
and how her parents, they were saying she's already, feeling bad that people are going to think that she's making something up. Why are all of these negative things coming? Like, okay, let's try to shield this. Her boyfriend said, I hope they don't think I had anything to do with it, or she was fighting for 48 hours. To detectives, that's a red sign, because how do you know she was fighting for 48 hours?
Well, and part of the interview that we did not air, the mother did say that she was fighting. She was fighting for her life physically. She was fighting for her emotional life. Just on the face of it, I agree with you. That is cryptic.
Yes.
But I also would say that per the instructions of the police, the parents aren't saying what they were told.
Yes.
So there are so many missing pieces. But Pamela, thank you so much. I think you do make an excellent point. Thank you so much
thank
for
you.
Your phone
You're
call.
Welcome.
Mary, I've covered, cops forever. You've covered the criminal justice system as well. One of the things that suspicious reporters have had to learn, and I take this all the way back to the University of Idaho murders back in 2022. And you remember how heavily that was covered. And there was so much coverage that it seemed that this case dragged on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, when the reality is that it really dragged on only for a month and a half. And the police were saying that they need more tips and they need more information, and they just didn't know and they don't have anything. And then, boom, they make an arrest. When the day before that arrest, they were telling the public they just don't have a clue, when, as the previous caller just said, they had plenty of clues. Is that the kind of posture that you believe we're seeing right here and now, Mary?
Yeah, police are never going to tell you everything that they have, all the evidence they're gathering, and they're probably still taking calls, looking at the videos, taking testimony and all of these things. People are calling in tips. People have said, you know, there weren't any other calls about a child on the interstate. But you know that they are playing it close to the vest, because, you know, if they do have suspects, who knows, they don't want to tip people off. And so, you know, in this kind of case, they probably are still gathering evidence to see what it was. Was it real? Happened? And what's out there? You know, nowadays there are cameras everywhere. So they're going to be looking at this. And I think, you know, when people care about something, they want to feel that they're caring about something that's real. That's why you see people demanding information. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get it. And, you know, when her parents talk about she physically and mentally, we don't know what she is going through. And traditionally, you have not really seen, you see black women portrayed as just being strong, not as people who need help, who are vulnerable, that are in need of protection and protecting. So this is kind of different. As I said, you really don't see this fascination usually surrounding an African-American, and we know indigenous women as well. We usually have their family members just screaming for media coverage instead of in this case.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Carly Russell case in Hoover, Alabama. What do you think? I'd like to hear what your thoughts are about this disappearance and finding of this young black woman. Lines are open at 202-319-7810. So, you know, Kathy and Mary, but this is actually for Kathy. I wanted to kind of piggyback on something that Mary just shared. A lot of people are like, Hoover, Alabama, what's that? Where is that? I worked in Alabama. And Hoover, Alabama is south of Birmingham. It is an affluent community south of Birmingham. Has always been upper middle class community. And I think that there are some other factors involved here where, and don't get me wrong, all lives, no matter what their socioeconomic status happens to be, are important. But I think, you know, Kathy, you know, Mary makes a really interesting point, because a lot of times missing women cases, these are, you know, white women, blonde, blue-eyed, missing white women, and they get a lot of attention. But the Hoover community, this is an affluent community. This is an educated young woman. And so I think a lot of the factors are ripe for attention, Kathy.
I believe so as well. So just, you know, thinking of the population that I work with and that I come across daily, we see missing cases all the time. Mm-hmm. And I have to ask myself, okay, if a person, an individual from a lower class or a lower socioeconomic class went missing, would she or would this person get the same attention? And the answer is a quick no. The answer is a quick no. Again, all lives, no matter where you're from or what you look like, deserves this manner of attention. But you're absolutely right. I do believe that that plays a role in it, because we have several people missing now that are not on the news, right, that will never make the news. So I think that does play a factor in it for sure, especially African-Americans and indigenous people.
I agree with that. And I will say that this case saw a lot of movement on Black Twitter and Black TikTok, but the boots on the ground in Hoover were not majority members of the Black community. A lot of the people, and again, Hoover being an extremely affluent part of Alabama, there were people from all over, Black people certainly, but there were a lot of people who did not look like us who were participating in the search for this young woman before she was found. We are talking about the Carly Russell case in Alabama. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. I want to know what you think about this. Is this an abduction? Is it a hoax? Is it something else? What do we need to know about it? Lisa calling from Maryland. We are going to talk to you next, so please do not hang up. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will get to your phone calls. We're going to take a quick break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com. And don't forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. And that way you can hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. We continue this conversation on SiriusXM in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're looking into the mystery surrounding the disappearance of Carly Russell in Hoover, Alabama. My guests are Kathy Givens, co-founder of 1211 Partners, a nonprofit group fighting sex trafficking, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist with Roll Call. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, you can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Lisa, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on. Lisa, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to give a comment. What happened to this young lady is not a joke or a hoax. In the 70s, similar situations happened.
Lisa, turn your radio down for me, please. We got a little bit of feedback, but go right ahead.
Okay. Hold on one second. I just wanted to say what happened to this young lady is not a hoax or a joke.
Mm-hmm.
In the 70s, I was a student at UMBC, and I was waiting at a bus stop in Baltimore City with a friend of mine. We were coming back to school on the weekend, and a van pulled up. Two men jumped out of the van, and they grabbed me and my friend, and they were attempting to pull us in the van. And we were kicking and screaming and fighting and kicking, and they finally let us go. And when they let us go, we went back to the bus stop, and we asked people, why didn't you help us? And they said, oh, we thought you knew them. So, you know, this happens more often than we know. The numbers are not reported, they're not accurate, but it was a scary, very frightening experience, and it's still scary to this day. I'm in my early 60s. Mm-hmm. So I believe what happened to her, it happens more frequently than we know, and people need to take this serious, because a large number of African-American individuals disappear, even grown adults, that we never, ever hear about. So I'm glad you all are talking about this topic.
Lisa, thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Go right ahead. Someone was going to comment.
Well, I just think that what the caller said, we really have to, this is Mary, take this seriously, because I think if you ask many Black and Indigenous women, have you ever had something happen to you where, you know, you had a close call or your gut told you something was off? you would be surprised the amount of people who have these kinds of stories. So I do think that people could relate to it. Just as Kathy said, it's something that you can relate to. You have heard these stories, and you know about women who have had these encounters. But I do think, too, people are looking at this big case, and it does have so many elements that have really a drama to it. So people are drawn to it no matter what their race. The call, the child perhaps, what happened, the fact that things were left there. So I do believe that people see that as dramatic. But as Kathy said, they can relate sometimes to these near misses or these encounters, just as the caller said. And you would like to feel that if you went to someone that you would be believed. So many people are saying, let's at least let this play out and see what is going on. And no matter what the answer is, this is obviously someone who is in need of sympathy and some sort of support, no matter what the circumstance.
Kathy, to Mary's point, here in the DMV, we know that almost monthly there are reports in the news of, and mostly they are girls or younger teenagers who have survived attempted kidnappings. I mean, and in some cases, because there are cameras everywhere, there have been several cases over the past year or so in Northern Virginia where you've had, little girls, when you've had some creepy guy pull up in a car or a van and try to snatch them, and they don't go down without a fight, kicking and screaming and scratching, and have been able to get away. And so to Lisa's point, we certainly cannot discount the possibilities that something like that has happened and certainly is continuing to happen to women who are just walking down the street, minding their own business, trying to get to work, trying to get home, or just hanging out. But my question for you, Kathy, because you have dealt with survivors of trafficking, what percentage would you say are women who were snatched off the street as opposed to being groomed?
That percentage would be hard, but I would say the majority is groomed. We do hear, though, for instance, of people that were what we would call like catfished, right? So maybe they meet them on social media and they really think that it's a person that is trustworthy. And then they show up to a destination and it's somebody completely different, and boom, the abduction takes place or the kidnapping takes place, right? So that I think we see more of than just someone driving by and abduction occurs. But it does happen, so we can't dismiss it, right? And I think it's really, really important. I'm also a survivor myself, and I can remember, okay, let's say someone is in sex work or traffic or being trafficked. They are at high percentage or high risk of being abducted while they're out there, right? So we may see them as, oh my gosh, this individual is what we would call prostitution. We now have the correct term, which is prostituted woman or girl. And they just be minding their business, but a van comes by or a car comes by, and those individuals are at high risk of being abducted. So we see it like that more frequently than how we're seeing it now in Carly's situation. And again, I'm not saying that this is not a trafficking situation. It very well could be.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about the Carly Russell case in Hoover, Alabama, the young black woman who disappeared from the side of the road last Thursday night and returned home on Saturday. Mary, when you look at what we do know so far, what is it that you want to know beyond the obvious, but what's missing from the information that we have?
Well, I think most people want to know if indeed something did happen or if there's somebody that did something, They want to know, is there somebody still at large? Is there somebody out there that people have to look out for? Of course, people are wondering about, is there a child? Was there a child? Because obviously people want to know if a child was in danger. But basically, I think they want to know what is out there now. And if the police are looking for someone, should they be looking for someone too? Is there a description? And then I think people want to know that if it is more complicated than that, does Carly need all kinds of help? Because parents did say it was a physical and a psychological struggle. So they want to get a little bit more details on what exactly that means. And I think that's some of the main questions that are out there, but there's questions really surrounding absolutely everything. And I think people are kind of prurient too, unfortunately, so people always want details of just what happened in that time, and some of that is curiosity that's not about her. It's about just people want to know everybody's business.
Yeah, and certainly we all are very, very curious, including those of us whose business it is to be curious, the Mary C. Curtises and the Harold Fishers and the like. But there are two things that I am, particularly curious about. And I would imagine, Mary, have you had a chance to see the highway video?
No, I haven't seen that.
So let me describe it, and it's everywhere. Just like on any given day, if you wake up in the morning and turn on the television and you have a traffic report, whether they are state agencies, they have live video of traffic day and night, 24/7, 7 days a week. And in the video, the police have described her Mercedes pulling over with flashing lights. But this is on Interstate 459 in Alabama. This is an interstate. It's not a rural, dusty road. There are dozens of cars. And she pulls over. And there are recordings of police dispatch, but the actual 911 call from Russell has not been released. We've heard descriptions of it, but the actual call has not been released. But there are calls of police dispatch once they arrived. And in the video, and it's a little blurry, so you couldn't tell whether or not this is a Mercedes or you just see a car with flashers pulling over to the shoulder. And after that, there is some movement, but you really can't see. It's very, very difficult to see. The description of the call, of the actual 911 call, is that you do hear her screaming. I think the thing that is fascinating, and Mary mentioned this earlier, was that Carly Russell said that she saw a young white male with a white t-shirt and a diaper by the side of the road. And the thing that I guess I find particularly curious, Kathy, is that no one else saw this. And of course, this is at night, but I would imagine if a Carly Russell can see a toddler in a diaper and a white t-shirt by the side of the road, just about anybody driving by on an interstate would see the same.
I think so as well. However, we really don't know because we don't know the details. So if this was an abduction or a trafficking situation and the abductor or the trafficker has planned this out, she could have been followed. She could have been targeted, right? And it could have been strategic enough for her to be the only one to see the child. We don't know all of those details, not saying that it's impossible, but I would be more concerned, honestly, questioning if the questions that are arising now, like, why did she stop? Even if you did see a child in the middle of the night on the freeway, why would you stop? That concerns me, because as a people, our first instinct should be to stop, right? So I'm more concerned about those conversations that are like, well, why would she stop? Anyone. I think our first instinct is to stop. Of course, we know that things happen now and we have to be more cautious, but the first instinct is to stop. So again, I'm speaking as an advocate, like,
right.
I'm
but you're also speaking as a human being.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you really, you make such a great point, because in my 50-mile commute from D.C. to Baltimore every day, if I see any kind of chaos or foolishness on the side of, whether it's on the side of the road or if someone is driving to the point where it's so dangerous, you see craziness, you know, on the highways literally every day. But there are some days where you see someone who is driving and you do call the police because, number one, they almost hit you and you're annoyed, and they almost hit the person in front of you and they're weaving in and out. And so, yeah, the first thing you would do is kind of, pick up the phone. And so, you know, Kathy, I do believe that you make such an excellent point, which, according to police, yes, she did call, but she also pulled over. And so, and some people would say, well, you know, she called, but she should have pulled over, or she should have just called and not pulled over, or maybe she should have just pulled over and not called. I mean, all of these distinctions without a difference, but apparently there was something that prompted her to pull over. And the other point that you did make, Kathy, and of course all of these things are obviously speculation, is that she very well could have been targeted. And I think that is probably one of the most frightening things of all.
Yes, yes, I agree, especially if she was targeted. And, I think we just need to wait for the details and figure out how we can support this person. Worst case scenario, let's say it was a hoax. Let's just say people are right and it was a hoax. There's still someone in need. She still needs help. She still needs resources. So regardless of what the circumstances are, I think the community should rise up to be ready to support this individual, regardless of the outcome of the details.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, and I think, Kathy, you may be perhaps best equipped to answer this. What happens for Carly Russell now? Now that she is home, what next steps need to be taken to make her whole based on what little bit we know? Think about that, and I'll be back in just a moment. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a bit. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our conversation about the Carly Russell case out of Hoover, Alabama. My guests are Kathy Givens, co-founder of the 1211 Partners, a nonprofit group fighting sex trafficking, and Mary C. Curtis, columnist with Roll Call. Before the break, I was talking about what you suspect Carly Russell may need to make her whole after this ordeal, whatever this ordeal may be. But Kathy, even before you answer that, can you kind of, first of all, give us a thumbnail sketch of 1211 Partners? And you did say that you were a survivor of trafficking. And again, we must say that we do not know what happened to Carly Russell. All we know is that, according to reports and according to an interview with her parents, that there was some kind of physical and emotional ordeal, and that she was missing for 2 days, and that she was in pretty bad shape when she got home. Again, this is according to her parents. But from your perspective, obviously you have dealt with survivors of trafficking and this kind of horrific abuse. And so when someone is rescued from it, what is the first kind of thing that they need to begin the walk down the path of being made whole?
I think when you're addressing and trying to overcome any type of severe trauma and complex trauma such as this, again, we don't know Carly's situation, but immediately, the immediate thing is support from your family and community, whoever that may be, which it seems like she's tapped into that. So community is powerful. The next resource I would say is mental health resources, right? Because regardless of what she's been through, she's going to need some restoration for her mental and physical and emotional being to become whole again, right? And whatever whole may look like for her, that's completely self-defined. And then as we start to learn the details, or as her family and she begins to uncover some of the details that she may have experienced, or some of the experiences that she's gone through, that will then determine the other resources to follow. So it's a really individualized walk for individuals that are trying to overcome complex trauma. If it's sexual assault, then of course she's going to tap into those resources. But it's really the support of the community and mental health resources that I would say first and foremost, because it seems like she has the other things covered, right? Like the shelter, the food, basic needs. It seems like she has those basic needs covered. So I would definitely tap into the, say that most immediately it's the community and the mental health resources.
You turned your ordeal into a mission. Explain the 12-11 partnership and how this became a mission for you instead of just a traumatic experience.
When I was able to exit the life of trafficking, the healing journey, and that's one thing that I could say for Carly too, depending on what she's gone through, the healing journey is very, very individualized, right? So my healing journey was long because I didn't know what resources existed. And so for me, when I finally understood what trafficking was and that it happened to me, I jumped into the space of volunteering because I always wanted to give back, learned what it was. And so throughout working in the space, I was able to partner with other nonprofits and learn what trafficking was. And I realized that there was a gap in resources. So after one has gone through comprehensive programming and the mental health resources and all those things, and then you return to like what we would call quote unquote regular life or normal life, it's terrifying after you've been through trauma. It's like, well, how do I start over? How do I start my life over? So 1211 was founded in response to that. It's survivor led. And the meat of what we do, the heartbeat of what we do is mentorship. So mentoring individuals based on their individualized plans, to just be reintegrated back into community the way that they see fit, right? And it's a beautiful process to watch. You go from trauma to the process of healing. And for me, again, 1211 didn't exist and other nonprofits didn't exist, or I didn't know about them. So it's very important that we, you know, especially in Carly's case, figure out what happened so that we can provide the right resources. And so she doesn't have to, her healing journey may not have to be 7 to 10 years, right? It can be a smoother process than that.
What Kathy has said is really amazing. She's doing great work. And, you know, I talk about not only my column at Roll Call, but my CQ Roll Call podcast, Equal Time, about black women a lot. And, you know, I didn't start an organization, but I do feel often that black women do need a certain amount of space and peace. And, you know, my worry, as Kathy has said, maybe she just needs people to reach out and help in many ways. And my worry is the fact that we have this culture that is totally always, you know, what's going on, what's happening, what happened to you, wanting more and more information to make sure that she gets that space, that peace, whatever she needs. And the fear is because we're a culture that chews people up, that maybe, you know, she has to really protect that through her family, through organizations like Kathy's described, and just whatever it is she needs, whatever it is, whether it's just counseling or whatever happened to her, whether it's, as Kathy said, a hoax or something that was very, very real. And that's sometimes what black women, indigenous women, don't get.
But Mary, here's, I hear you. But here is my problem with that. And it goes back to the very first question I asked in this conversation of you. Why is this so fascinating? And your your answer was, you know, all of the mystery and all of the drama, but Black women who are missing historically do not get the attention or the media coverage. And we will hear time and time and time again, we've got, black women who are missing and people who are clanging the bell and beating down the door of the police and beating down the door of reporters. You've got to cover this because this person is missing and they don't get the attention. And yet, yes, we can talk about, within our community, yes, Black women need space when they go through this trauma and they're part of this great big media frenzy, hullabaloo, and we need to let them breathe. But can you have it both ways?
Well, every person in every case is individual.
Yeah.
And we know that. And so, when these parents and sisters and spouses and partners go to the media and they say, I know this woman, she was going here and then she disappeared, that's the danger. We can't treat it as, this is what it is. Every person is an individual, and that's what we have to get over,
but
being seen as a human being, as an individual, and each case is different. And it doesn't mean, every case, yes, we need to have attention to it, because we've seen time and time these cases where people go missing for such a long time, and we really never, know the answer. Look, they just found that serial killer in New York, and so many of the women had been tossed aside because they said they were escorts.
Yeah.
And they all had families that cared about them.
Yeah, and I think the biggest complaint is, in our community, the complaint is that you don't cover us when we have a crisis that needs the media attention. But as you said, every case is an individual case. And I think the thing that is really, really difficult, whether it is in our community or the greater community, just as you said, this case in New York, is that this thing is continuing to happen. And there are so many people, people of color and people of influence, people of affluence, and people who are at the very, very bottom of the socioeconomic ladder. And the reality is that these things do happen. And as exhausting as it may be for us to continue to pay attention, we have to find the strength to do just that. We will continue to watch the Carly Russell case and the very next case and the case after that and the case after that. Thank you both, Kathy Givens and Mary C. Curtis. I appreciate you talking to us. We'll keep listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That is the Daily Drum for this Tuesday, July 18th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.